This is No Direction's PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage. PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage was made possible thanks to the support of the Roll for Combat podcast, as well as the dedication of our team of volunteers. Due to possibly questionable language, this panel is rated Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Anyway.
All right.
Welcome, everyone. I'm John. I'm the one who doesn't get a name plate. Keith Apperson and Jack Brown are the two local venture captains here, or not necessarily here, but back home in Minnesota. And they had the job that I had for a while, and I've kind of come back. One of the reasons that we wanted to start a nonprofit was to help put our area on a solid financial footing going forward. We had a consecutive string of venture captains who had enough discretionary income that the region could go and have a high level or a high bar as far as what we presented to both our players and to anyone else who would come visit us. And so when I stepped into that, being able to continue that process, I was like, well, what happens if whoever comes next doesn't have that same level of discretionary income? So the ability to say, hi, we want you to give us money, and being able to then use those funds to be able to buy folders, pens, pads of paper, incidental things, like a stapler or tape dispenser, just... so you don't have to I'll stop by Target and pick that stuff up on the way to the convention. It's like, oh, we'll just hit our Amazon Smiles account and it'll get sent to us.
Or even things like buying dice that we're going to do for charity events to raise money. Instead of having someone spend, dropping $400 to front it, we can have the company
pay for it.
Yep. All the way up to posters and banners and putting down money for ink.
Well, that's a unique situation for our area. I will neither confirm nor deny that I work at the University of Minnesota as a printer.
That's nice.
So, the University of Minnesota has not known how much they have donated to Pathfinder Society. They have no idea how much they've donated.
And no one's recording this either.
Yeah, it's kind of an under the table agreement. My table.
No one hears from there, right?
Nope.
So anyway, we thought we'd talk a little bit about the process by which you, as an individual or a group of individuals, start the very long road to becoming a nonprofit organization. So Keith, you want to take over that?
So one of the things that I did want to clarify. I know that we are 501c3. Yep. We are actually a nonprofit because we are a nonprofit because our purpose, 10,000 Lakes Gaming, is hosting events that we will use to raise money for charities. So we're actually raising money, taking that, going and putting that straight back out into community, or right back into our community. And because of that, because of how we ran things, we were actually a nonprofit, whereas I believe OPF is a not-for-profit, Tanya?
That is an interesting question.
You guys are...
We are in the process of filing the last bits of the 501c3 paperwork.
Because all the language we've heard so far is not-for-profit.
Because until the government gives us that final piece of paper, we cannot call ourselves a nonprofit. So now, we are not-for-profit.
Yeah, okay.
But we do not get the same donation protections yet.
Okay.
So, the process. You want to become a 501c3. It's going to vary a little bit by state to state, but the biggest notes that we have... first of all, work on the things that all of the organizations are going to need, bylaws and articles.
Do you mind if I record this? Because I didn't bring notes.
Oh, no paper. Don't worry. We have a bunch of stuff that we're just going to email to you.
Oh,
there's
cool.
a list that'll be going around. And awesome. So we're planning on sending our articles of incorporation.
We'll have our articles, we'll have our bylaws, we'll have an example of our meeting minutes, We will
such as they are.
Exactly. And a list of all of the resources and benefits that we have on here that we'll be going through. So
that's the finance committee.
Yeah, we will have all of that available.
Cool. Save my rolling hand.
Yeah. So articles of incorporation and bylaws, basically just saying, you know, what the purpose of your organization is. Make sure that you have a good mission statement. Ours, 10,000 Lakes Gaming, have 10,000 Lakes Gaming promotes hobby gaming events for the betterment of our community and fundraising for other charitable organizations. So it goes and it incorporates all types of gaming, so we can easily involve the D&D players, the war miniatures players, card game players, that type of thing.
Magic. Yeah, if there's a game that can have a social aspect to it, we can go to a store or a company or an organization and be like, hi, we've been doing this for almost 10 plus years. We'd like to help you set up a convention or at least like maybe a meeting or a session that is meets every 2 weeks or every month. We can help you set that up. We can help manage that. And we can give you pointers on pitfalls, how things might work in your store or within your environment.
For the articles of incorporation and bylaws, basically you can go to any organization and they're available. So
yep.
Find somebody who's doing something similar to you, preferably in your state, but also grab OPF's information, grab our information, and just piecemeal the whole thing together. It'll show you everything that you need to do because they're super just cut and dry, really easy to put together. The state laws will change and vary a little bit there. You have to appoint officers. I am the secretary of 10,000 Lakes Gaming. These two are just board members at large. We also have our president and our treasurer.
And those three names are the only three named ones you have to have.
So secretary, treasurer, and what was it?
President.
Treasurer. Oh, yeah,
secretary, president. Yep.
Is this where we should talk about gaming versus gaming?
I was about to do that. So, choosing the name for your organization is a very difficult and precise art, because we made the mistake.
Well, I wouldn't call it a mistake, but I like the name.
We're 10,000 Lakes Gaming.
But it's just
that has caused. First of all, the IRS came back and was like, "Wait a second, gaming." That is a definition.
Gaming is gambling.
To the IRS. To the IRS, gaming equals gambling. And then you're like, whoa, no.
We did include in our bylaws, in our articles, that gaming had a specific definition for us, but of course they didn't read that, they just responded.
They had a dollar sign on it.
And then, about a year and a half after we got all of that done, we just got a call from our bank the other day saying, wait a second, you're a gaming organization, you can't have an account with us.
Yes.
So we had to go and get that resolved. So, with that in mind, we would advise anybody making a non-profit or not-for-profit to avoid the word gaming, to just find some other way to express what you're doing. Yes.
Or just hobbies. If you really want the word gaming in it, or game.
Board gaming.
Go ahead and do synonym. It, but know what you're going to get into.
Be prepared to, you know, submit three times and defend yourself to all kinds of different things. And yeah, it's, you can do it, but yes. With that in mind, once you have your officers picked, your name picked, you've got articles of incorporation, you've got bylaws, then you've got to go and do the whole IRS thing and incorporation. I can't remember what's the exact amount that we ended up paying for that.
The IRS has two distinct levels of nonprofits when you first apply. And it's based upon how much money you expect to be taking in your fiscal year. If you are expecting to take in less than, I want to say it's $10,000 annually, the fee for the IRS is $400. If it is greater than $10,000 annually, that fee becomes $800. You only have to pay it once, thankfully, but the IRS does make a distinction based on the size of the organization that you have.
was it if it ever becomes, so in the future if you ever have that change happen, then you'd have
to Nope.
Okay. It's that initial one-time cost mm-hmm. of the IRS not reading what you send them and coming back and say, yeah, we expect to take in less than $10,000 annually, so we're paying the $400 fee.
Mm-hmm. We've got your paperwork, but where's the check?
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly. And we kind of had the luxury of doing this for a few years before starting this whole process. So we kind of had an idea of how much money we do take in donations. Right. So we can accurately gauge which one should we be applying for. So,
and we should call out that our president and one of our BLs also... Erica Lochnow did all of the paperwork, and it continues to do most of the paperwork. So she's been invaluable.
She did that. And if there's any specific questions that you have and stuff, feel free to direct them to us, and we'll get them through her as well.
Erica,
and she'll be on
the amount of times that we did that.
She'll be on the contact list on the website, so easy enough to find.
Also, of course, we had our somebody with law training go through and actually look through all of our corporation, our law articles of incorporation and stuff, which is always a good thing to do because the language does get tricky.
And if you don't have anybody who within your immediate friends of circles, most either state bureau should have a list of attorneys who will look at your stuff pro bono. Just being like, hey, did we make any mistakes? And they'll be like, nope, everything looks good. You should be fine. Or, yeah, you might want to change this paragraph. Or if you happen to, there's a law office right down my street where I work, you can just pop in and be like, hi, do you have somebody who does law or, finance law specifically for nonprofits? And they'll be like, yes, we do. We're doing this. And you might be able to get somebody to come on in their lunch break and take a look at it or schedule one.
Entire process, 4 to 6 months. So it's not terrible.
Most of that is waiting for the IRS to get back to you. Sometimes it can take longer. We have some Snickers in the back, the peanut gallery. I think depending upon the level of granularity or sophistication of what you were doing, it can also lengthen the process.
And we're local, so it's easier.
Yep. We're considering, basically we are for one state. Not necessarily a global organization.
Yes. And that included the getting the letter back from the IRS saying, we need more explanation on this, which luckily we had access to a fax machine, because that is how you get information to them faster.
Yep. If anyone has had to have dealings with the IRS, then they do not call you. They will only correspond through letters. That is how the IRS basically protects you and themselves. So if you get a letter from the IRS, yeah, that's real. If you get a phone call from the IRS saying, hey, you owe us money, that's a total scam. And that is essentially how you must correspond with the IRS. You can call them and they can answer your questions, but you can't do anything over the phone as far as, well, we can change these things, but will that make it good? Awesome, we're set then, right? So a fax machine is actually
necessary.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that also precludes you cannot scan something and send it to them as a PDF. It must be a paper copy. You attach it to a carrier pigeon, and eventually it gets there.
And people were complaining about play.
So I'm interested in the business aspect of it. So you guys we take in money from the masses by saying, mm-hmm. hey, throw your money at us.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then we take that money, and is there a certain portion of that that you must absolutely break off to give to yourselves for staplers, papers, pencils, dry erase markers, wet erase markers, things that people sniff in the back end, whatever, and then you take the rest and give it to the foundations? Or do you have a set number of monies that go to the foundations, and then you look around and you go, well, looks like we're buying 500 reams of paper because we have all this money left over?
For us, like I said, we had the luxury, we had been doing the work of our nonprofit without actually being one. So we kind of had already a sense of how much we were spending on, say, office supplies or, you know, dice or various other things. So we could go into our first real quote-unquote meeting and be able to hammer out a budget that we can have accurate forecasts of what we expect to pay for certain things. Sometimes we're off because we have a lot more people show up and take a new player packet, thus we have to buy more folders. Mm-hmm. But you can kind of get an idea of, like, just by going to your local office supply superstore, walking around going, oh, that's going to cost $5. We can expect to go through one of those in a year. That's going to cost $12. We can expect to go through one of those in a lifetime, like a paper cutter or a couple of staplers. So a lot of your first fiscal year budget is likely going to be things you are going to never, ever have to replace unless it sprouts legs and walks away at a convention.
What happens if we've already fronted those costs?
Then you don't have to spend money out of your nonprofit budget for them.
And say those pieces would be considered donations to the nonprofit?
At that point.
They can be, sir.
Yeah, they can be.
But you'll want receipts and things.
Yeah.
As far as figuring out how much you're going to hold back, you can go on, and part of what we're going to talk about a little bit later are the sites that you can go on to check what other nonprofits are doing, what other charities are doing. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of nonprofits out there, which I'm sure everyone's heard of them, where, yeah, you give them $100, they're going to keep $85 of it.
Yeah, or
and
more.
They forward $15 onto whatever you were actually donating to.
But doesn't that make them a not-for-profit?
No.
No.
No, not at all.
And it's not even, total dollars. It's
the distinction, as I understand it, and you correct me when if I am wrong, and likely is, a not-for-profit allows you to carry over budget money from one fiscal year to the next. A nonprofit says, this is the budget money that we have. It must be spent by midnight of the fiscal year.
We can still carry a budget.
We can still carry some over, but it's a lot. It's like, oh, we took in $5,000 and we only paid out $400 of it. We got to get rid of some of it. Because then the IRS can come back and say, guys, what's going on? Because you have to file paperwork. Essentially, you have to pay taxes for your company every year. It's like, what came in, what went out? And in the site that, the various website that Keith's been talking about is, you can go in and you can determine how much of each dollar an organization, keeps the overhead and how much they actually use to donate. So if you look, a good nonprofit is, generally speaking, 85 to 90 cents of every dollar you donate goes somewhere else.
Which is our goal.
Which is our goal.
85% going back to charity.
Two is in the budgeting methods. A nonprofit at the end of the year, when you file your taxes, has to clear your profit line to zero by giving it to the charities that you're supporting.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A not-for-profit at the bottom line can decide that they're going to give it in salary bonuses and other things back into, and that's where you get the ones that spend 85% back to them and 10% to charity.
Yep.
And back and forth. And it's also how much your donations can be deducted. What can be deducted.
Yeah.
So who's giving money to you, what they get to do with it.
Mm-hmm. And also, it's like, we have certain, expenses. We have web hosting. But things we don't have to pay upkeep on a building. We don't have salaries. None of us are getting paid on this.
It is possible to get to the point where you have somebody on a salary.
Yes.
Yeah.
We are choosing not to do that at this point.
One of our associates that's working with Pathfinder Society is putting herself through school for once.
Mm-hmm. To host our website.
Then you will need to determine your local state law as far as what she will be able to claim on a donation for hosting and or designing whatever you have her do.
Well, within the 501c3c, I know there are regulations to set up grants through schools. How do you do that?
That's kind of beyond our pay grade.
To set up a grant through a school, it has to be open to anyone going to that school for that program.
Yep.
You can put her on salary and pay pieces to her, and then she can go pay her schooling. But then she has to pay income on that money.
Yeah, she has to pay income tax. Income. And then you have to report that as
an employee.
As an employee, which means you would need to file a 1099 with the IRS, as well as being able to give that same 1099 to her. Because as a contractor, you are not required to take out Social Security, unemployment, FICA. There are a lot of things that you as an employer would have to pay into the IRS that you would need to then remove from whatever you give her, which is why independent contractors say, oh, I'll do this for $300. You write them a check for $300. By January 31st, by law, you are required to provide the IRS and that contractor with a 1099.
And then they
claim
tax.
And then they pay taxes on that.
I'm familiar with that. My brother just got hurt.
Okay. Hi, please, hello. Come in. Come on up closer to the front. Jack, you want to hand me the...
With all of that done, you got your officer's articles of incorporation, you got bylaws, you've gone and you paid your money to the IRS. You go and you get that submitted, you wait your 4 to 6 months, you get your letter back that has the magical nonprofit tax ID on it.
Oh.
And now you get to start doing the fun stuff. Specifically, you get to start having your official meetings, which hopefully you've already been having up to that point, and keeping your minutes, and appointing your committees, and figuring out when your elections are going to happen, and setting up your officer roles, and doing all of your yearly budgeting.
Please tell me you have a how-to guide.
We'll
put one together.
Please do.
Within the articles and the bylaws, you'll go through and you specify what your officers are going to be, what their terms are going to be, how the elections work. So that's all already covered. You just got to actually do it. Minutes we'll have examples of those. We've got all of our minutes, documented, and they're openly available for anyone who would ask about them. So those are all available. As far as your meetings, Robert's Rules are out there. You can go and read the few hundred-page guide, or you can just kind of wing it like we usually end up doing.
Figure out what works for your team.
Exactly. You know, if you're like we originally started when we just had, five people sitting around the table, it's much different than when you get, a room full of 30 to 40 people all trying to, participate in the meeting.
And that is... that's a recommendation we can make. If you do have 30 to 40 people in your board at a meeting, probably should not say everybody gets to talk.
That's when you introduce the talking stick.
Or something.
Because all of a sudden,
how does this mesh together with our society? So we have venture captains, venture agents, venture lieutenants. Are they all supposed to be included into the not-for-profit? Not at all. Or is there just a board and we say, there's the four of us, we're going to be the four of us, or we vote ourselves in and it's going to be for life and that's the way it's going to be?
Initially speaking, it's probably going to be your local venture team. And then, you're already doing all of this and you're doing it, you're doing that work. And so you set yourselves up, and then you're like, okay, hey, we can do this. Then as you progress, you can potentially start talking to other people who are not part of your local venture team to say, hey, this person has a ton of experience or has a lot of really great ideas as far as how our region can grow. Let's bring that person in. We can approach that person. How do you feel about being an at-large member of the board of directors for the nonprofit? Well, I'm just like a guy who shows up and plays. We understand that. But within talking to you for the last 2 months, we've determined that you have a lot of skills that we think would be beneficial to our organization, and we would love to have you on.
So to give you an example of ours, president of our nonprofit is one of our venture lieutenants. The treasurer is another venture lieutenant. I'm the secretary, venture captain. And then we've got our other captain and other lieutenants all as just board members at large.
Yep.
One of the things we've made a distinction to do is, especially once we actually got our status, is we will have 10,000 Lakes meetings. We will have our MSP Lodge meetings. Or MNPOP now?
MNPOP.
Minnesota Organized Play. Or PISO.
Minnesota PISO Organized Play. MNPOP.
Just to make sure that partially that's to say because our officers are different.
Yes.
So I'm an officer at large for the company, but I'm one of the venture captains. So it just changes things, and it gets kind of odd sometimes too, because I'm also the head of the SkullCon committee.
Having
and such and so.
Sorry to interrupt there. Having I want to say a break or a. Oh, a break's a good idea.
Yeah.
Having some sort of like having somebody running the company different from the person who runs the region is a really solid idea because they can work as a check and balance for each other. Okay, the idea that because what you need to do to make the nonprofit work, while similar to running a region, is very different in a lot of key ways. So. Because you really don't want a third full-time job, do you?
I'm a glutton for punishment.
You will burn yourself out in 6 months. And if that's the case, then I recommend you go to people who organize your stores and be like, hey, do you have time on a Tuesday night next week to sit down and talk about how our region works? Identify the people locally that you think have the abilities to potentially be groomed into that sort of situation. I mean, if the guy just shows up and plays, but he doesn't really stick around to talk about it, well, maybe not. But if there's somebody who's like, hey, wow, this is a lot of fun, you know, hey, where else were you doing this? We talk to that person later.
And it might be the person that's volunteered, hey, I know you got a con coming up, and it's like, you need some help. Mm-hmm. And that's where a lot of ours came out, is running cons. The daily game days, they pretty much self-sustain, but conventions are a huge amount of effort. As anyone who's done anything, even a small one.
How many conventions do we support?
We are up to eight? To 5 or 6.
Yeah.
We do 9.
Yeah.
We go to 9.
We go to
something to support. Something that I would add in there too is you guys have set up to be gaming. Nonprofit, not just a society nonprofit.
Right. Absolutely.
And that means that if you induct a board member that's not society, that's not a problem.
Yep.
Because of the way the nonprofit is.
Exactly.
You're not going to bring a non-venture officer into your venture officer meetings, but having them on the board might be, you need a magic person.
Exactly. That's about to say, you could find the top magic judge in your region and approach that person. Hey, want to join us and, you know, doing this sort of thing? You know, we can help run magic tournaments. We can have a centralized repository of people and knowledge so that it's not reinventing the wheel every time you try and have a magic tournament or an X-Wing tournament or Adventurers League or anything along those same lines.
Because a lot of those events aren't going to work the same as a Starfinder or Pathfinder game day because they're different.
Yep. Different parent companies, different locations.
And when we were still, when our venture officers were not exactly the same people and we were getting more people involved in the nonprofit, when John was not a venture lieutenant, he would sit in another room and wait for us.
Yeah. I mean,
and chat with whoever. Yeah.
You can sit in on the meetings. There's nothing that says you can, but I was like, this doesn't involve me.
Well, it's more that you were sitting out of the venture officer meeting. Well, it's true.
But
you wanted to anyway.
Being a nonprofit, going through all of this work, doing all of that overhead does come with a lot of benefits, which is another thing that we wanted to share out with everybody. One of the biggest things, or probably the two biggest things that we've made huge use of so far. First of all, Slack, if anybody's ever used it, as soon as you are a nonprofit, you can send in a letter to them and get absolutely free Slack hosting for
everything.
Dozens of people.
Yes, you will now have free Slack.
It's an online communication suite, so you can use it. It's like a online chat room.
You will have as many private channels as you want.
You get multiple channels for things. It can send out reminders. It can link with all sorts of different apps, Google, Trello that we use for planning. It is a great communication tool. So we've moved to the point where we have all of our daily organizers just pulled into one channel So they can come in, they can ask any sort of questions. Yeah. Then we've got channels for each one of our conventions. So anyone who wants to volunteer for or help out with the convention, we pull them into there, and they can only see things that are in there. We can sit there and exchange information, set up reminders,
and once the files. Once the convention is done, you can remove that person.
Just wipe it.
Yep.
And the big difference is, yes, there's a free Slack that you can get. That only has so much data storage. Mm-hmm. So there's no permanent history. The paid one, which was what you get as a nonprofit, that has history.
As opposed to paying $7 a month per person.
So
you get
it can get pricey. Yes, especially if you have, like we have, we're blessed with a lot of store coordinators and a lot of venture agents and a lot of lieutenants and captains. Yes.
We've got 32 people on Slack now. Mm-hmm. The other one that we have, when we make heavy use of, is Amazon Smile. As soon as you run a nonprofit, you can go there, get with Amazon, and anyone using smile.amazon.com, which is exactly like amazon.com, you just got to type the extra word in there, you get a percentage of anything that they buy there.
As long as they select you as their nonprofit beneficiary.
Right, and you just have to be registered in GuideStar for that so that they can look them up.
And that that instantly starts feeding money right back in. Other benefits that you can get, if you are big into communication and working with businesses, working with people, Salesforce also has a completely free version for nonprofits.
Anybody needs to learn Salesforce, I use that exclusively at my job. I work alongside developers and architects. Please look me up on forums, email me.
Sure.
Yeah, you get 10 users on their, specifically with their nonprofit business pack, which is all built for tracking your donors, tracking how much people are giving, setting people up on schedules, and basically knowing, hey, this person donated this much money, great, we're going to follow up with them again the next year. Mm-hmm. All of that is built in, makes everything really easy. You get the full Google App Suite. For free, branded for your company. Mm-hmm. So 10,000 Lakes Gaming has its own Google Drive, its own Google Sites, organize all of our emails through there. So we have our skullcon.org email addresses and our 10,000 Lakes Gaming email addresses all fed straight through Google. Mm-hmm. Stripe is another one that we discovered last year. Online payment systems. We took it, plugged it right into our website. I can't say how easy or difficult that was.
To put things in perspective, I tried to work with PayPal for about 3 months, and the best thing I found out at about that point in time is them admitting, yes, our development sandbox is broken. Test in production. I'm like, no. And a buddy at work said, well, a lot of the small companies are using Stripe. You should check that out. Looked at their examples. And in 5 minutes, literally 5 minutes, mm-hmm. I had my first example payment through, and it's like,
that was me, wasn't it?
No, it was just a test. It was not. And then once I got it through, the first one worked.
Yeah.
But that makes it so people can go to your website and
hit the donate button.
That's how everyone was buying registration, pre-registering for our conventions. Mm-hmm. And they give you, when you're a nonprofit, you get for the first 365 days, the free 10.
First, it was like 10 or 15. They gave us the first 10 to 15,000 of the number of transactions free. So usually it's 20 cents plus 2.5%. Yeah, 20 cents plus 2.5. They just waived that for the first year, mm-hmm. up to that cap. And we were well underneath that. Mm-hmm. Ours still, because we're still working on that.
Exactly.
For the next few weeks.
We've got a few more weeks left of that. On the other hand, there's also the one that we're working on for our on-site payment. Square also has a fairly good discount on all of their processing there as well.
And something that might be of interest to you if you do run cons and want to take donations for dice, Chessex.
Yes.
We are getting our dice for SkullCon at the lowest rate they charge.
Regardless of number.
Yeah. We're getting 500 for 42 cents, or I think it's a dime. Or is it 38, whichever. Whatever the lowest value.
It was 40 for the VO dice recently, so.
It's probably the same. But whatever, yeah. So we're getting, instead of buying them at 55 cents, we're buying them at 40, or something. It's 15 cents more per die that we can turn over to our profit. And That's always been a good seller for us.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we have a loose verbal advertisement agreement with Iris. We will use chesses.
Well, here's the great thing about becoming a nonprofit. When I worked for nonprofits, I struck up a friendship with one of the people in development, which is essentially the sales world of nonprofits. And just talking with Carl and how he did his job, he's like, the one piece of advice I can give you is you can't be afraid to go ask people for money. You have to have the ability to walk into a boardroom and it's you and there's five or six people who are making a lot more money than you ever will and say, hi, I want you to give us $10,000. And here's what that money's going to go towards. If you can't do that, you have to find it within you to do it. So if you already have a kind of under the table gentleman's like handshake agreement,
yeah, we have lost list.
You have to go. You can go to that company. It's like, hey, you know, we've done a lot of work with you in the past. Guess what? We're a nonprofit now. How can you help us? You know, we still want to continue working with you. How can you help us? What can you give us? And they're like, oh, you guys are this now. Well, we can probably give you this right now instead of what we were charging you earlier.
And maybe they won't.
And maybe they won't. And that's when you're like, okay, then you can go to Chessex and say, hey, we're a nonprofit. We'd like to get 200 dice. Awesome. 38 cents a die.
And to that end, I mean, by the way, asking for money, who's got a buck or two in their pocket right now? We'd like to take a donation. We'll gladly give you one of our Skullcon ribbons.
Smooth channel. It's a donation. You can give them anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
That's
no money on the
Well, you know what? We will find you later.
Okay. I have changed my room. I'll come later.
So, and if you don't have it now, you can get come find us. We'll be carrying around.
Okay. The reason that I'm asking a lot of these questions is we run our state like a business. I sat down with our venture crew and said, look. It doesn't make sense that we're going to grow all of these things. We're going to approach this like a business, and all of the things that we're going to organize are like a business. And we've done that. We've come back with some very, very great successes compared to where we were. I think, Paizo's been relatively pleased with us for the most part.
And we kind of, I mean, in very similar ways, that's how we started out. And really, a lot of this came out of when we decided to create...
So, now that you've given us money,
here's what we do with it.
Well, first, I'd like to talk about a very helpful site that, especially if you decide to go the route that we did, which is we're a 501c3 trying to give back to our local community. You want to be able to verify who you're giving money to, see what they're doing with that money, and basically just make sure that everything's on the up and up. There's two main sites for that. The one that we use most heavily is GuideStar. When we're looking for who we're going to give money to, GuideStar basically goes and verifies all kinds of nonprofits. It's also going to be, if you are a nonprofit, you want to get submitted with them as quickly as possible, because that's what most people use to verify nonprofits. GuideStar goes, does a huge, they gather up all the information, they send it out to all kinds of other companies. So if you're on the GuideStar list, you're probably going to get approved. GuideStar allows you to go in, you can see exactly what the mission statements are of the different nonprofits, where they're based out of, what they do with their money. If somebody is gold or platinum rated on GuideStar, that means that they are basically submitting all of their financial information to GuideStar. So you can go in there and you can see exactly what every dollar you donate there goes to.
How is that GDPR compliant?
We haven't been told yet. I don't think we've gotten any sort of information from them, have we?
No, our president would have gotten that.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, we'll get back to you on that. In a sense, what I believe what GuideStar asks is, how much money did you take in? Not how much money from who did you take in?
Correct.
Which is a complete... It's not necessarily campaign finance, where you have to list certain donors. You can basically say, we took in $7,000. And we gave out $6,500. We don't have to say, we took in $7,000 from Target Corp.
You don't have to turn in like a year-end budget.
No. No. We just basically have to be able to say, here's what we did, here's where it went. And some of the other companies, because of the nature of what they're doing, could be like, here's our entire financial picture.
Exactly.
Because we have nothing really to hide, because we took in 7,000, we pushed out 6,900. Because we had to pay for the web host.
Yep, and you can go out there and you can see exactly the salaries that all of those charities are giving to their employees as well. So that's a good way to get some interesting information about some places.
So, is there anything else? Because it is quarter two.
The other thing, take a look at especially not just within your board, but anyone who's part of your group. A lot of companies have Dollars for Doers programs. So like my company will, every hour that I'm working on 10,000 Leagues Gaming stuff, hey,
like
look,
this
right there, they're going to go ahead and basically pay $25 out to my charity or to a charity of choice. A lot of companies have stuff like that. A lot of companies will either make flat donations out to nonprofits if you're a board member on them, or will pay you for the work that you're doing for them.
Each corporation or company is likely different in how they handle employee volunteerism.
It's always worth checking into it.
Contact your HR department. It's like, do we have anything like this? Well, no, we don't. Hey, let's start something like that then. May I suggest Dollars for Doers?
And then you had mentioned the web hosting and such. DreamHost gives you a free domain, free hosting.
We've already paid for ours 10 years in advance.
That was actually a previous regime's decision.
No.
And
that is a capital expenditure that you should be able to use to write off on your taxes then.
I did.
Depreciation.
Yes, for everyone else, DreamHost will grab your domain name for you, let you host your site out there.
And we've always tried, even before we had our nonprofit status, we tried to make use of free services when we could.
You damn right.
So, for example, our current application host is Heroku on the hobbyist level. We know pretty clearly at some point in time we'll probably have to move off of that, but until it stops working, we're going to be fine with it. Just scale everything for what works for your nonprofit, for your lodge, for whatever you need to do. And
our problem is that our lodge is getting so big.
At this point, we'll probably open it up to the floor if you all have any questions for us. And if you can't think of anything now, we'll be around the convention. I'm at HQ from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., so I will be easily spotable.
We'll probably be back into our red shirt soon, and he'll be in his orange shirt.
I'll be rocking the orange here. So.
Well, we should have gotten Tommy's permission just to wear these. Permission.
Yeah, here's the other thing. Do ask for permission later.
Yes.
Yeah. It's better to regret something you have done than something you haven't done. Does anybody have any questions?
Do you have a story to go with that?
How much time do you have?
Dozens.
How much time do you have?
Yeah, what story?
Yeah, which one do you want to hear first? And can I remember it all? Yes.
Yeah. Well, one question I was having is that I'm hoping to take information from this and use it to help grow, honestly, gaming up in Northern California. Then, in this case, a community essence, not just society play, but hopefully grow, but also at the same time grow a con.
Yep.
I just ran one back in April, and the board idea I'm thinking is probably going to be better for me this time instead of taking it all on my own. So I'm hoping possibly to use this to help expand out. Using some of the dollars, I don't know, I'd have to look into it, for possible like tribal recompensation, I guess, to go out to these locations. Is that something you guys do?
No, honestly, we don't. Okay. We could.
Well, like say, going over to like the next county over, go talking to them, using that as something like that.
Say we bought donuts and coffee for our little seminar here. Mm-hmm. We could conceivably get reimbursed for the monies that we spent on consumables. I don't think there's any way Jolene, first of her name, Queen of the HQ Wallet Bane, was ever going to even look at us if we tried to like turn in our plane tickets, right, for to be reimbursed.
But she would just laugh at us. But when we said, hey, we can get these things for 28 cents a piece, and she's like, why am I not calling them already?
So there is a decent amount of stuff that you can get reimbursed for, especially if you can tie it directly to your mission. So okay. if we're going out and specifically, you know, presumably if I was going and driving, you know, two states away and knew that it was going to be a great recruitment opportunity and I came back with, you know, money that we could donate back to charity, I could go and get myself reimbursed for mileage and stuff like that.
Use your state's
mileage. I'm not like, I want to go to PaizoCon, so I'm going to
try exactly,
to
go. Yeah.
Use your state's mileage reimbursement.
If your budget allows for that, you are totally able to do that. Right now, our budget does not.
And we also, to an extent, choose not to even try to make it. We try to use our money wisely because every dollar we spend on incidentals is a dollar that we can't give to our charities.
Exactly. And we're, like I said, our goal has been from the beginning 85% of all the money that we take in going straight back to preferably local charities that we know are going to have an effect on our community.
What would be the downside of creating a not-for-profit so that we can carry over? We are growing at an exponential rate. We can't really forecast that far
advance. I don't know if any of us can really
answer that
question without knowing a lot more specifics. We can speak to what works well or worked well for us as a guide for you to take back home and be like, okay, this is similar. They don't have to worry about this. Okay, how is this going to work or mesh or run up against what these things do? As Tanya had mentioned, you can start out as a not-for-profit. You can operate as a not-for-profit for years if it works well for you. The IRS will have guidelines as far as what you are able to do with each designation. And if that works well for you, keep doing it. If throughout how your organization grows and starts doing various things, if you realize, oh, we might be in violation of this, then it might be time to move yourself into a 501c3 nonprofit.
And I do think that there are a lot less benefits for the not-for-profits than there are for the nonprofits.
Yes. Yep.
And people are going to be together. You're going to get and fewer of these companies helping you out as well.
Yes.
The thing is, though, the operating budget, I think it's $35,000 that you can hold over. And it's a pretty huge number. And if it comes near the end of the year, it's like, oh,
we've got
more money than we have to expect. Let's say, hey,
yeah.
Nonprofit or charity A that we have, how would you like another $10,000 this year?
I'm sorry. Did you say another $10,000? Why, yes, please.
So clearing the money is not going to be a problem.
Right.
Yeah.
I do have a question about what you would consider. You were talking about dice.
Mm-hmm.
I run basically almost by myself. Tony helps, and one of our other lieutenants helps. Basically, our con is you put the money in, you're going to get your money out. In the prize pool what we do for the players.
Uh-huh.
The question is, would that qualify? Or I know we'd bump up the price to do the charity.
Okay.
Production.
For example, for our big fundraising convention, it's $20 to get in the door.
Right.
And if you register, if you pre-register, it's $20.
Right.
If it's at the door, it's $25. So we're giving you an incentive to
right.
We really want you to give us money a lot quicker.
We can get
we do the same thing in early bird special.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at that point, all the money after that is through raffle, silent auction.
Okay.
So
we take in donations of stuff.
Yes. Right. People just give us stuff, which now we'll be able to give them a receipt for, so they can claim that on their taxes.
We have a store who donates a lot of figures, and we use them for GM prizes. Or mm-hmm. if they're huge or larger, they go on the prize table.
Yep, exactly.
And then what you can do now is, if you're a nonprofit, you say, oh, thank you, store. What's the value of those? What's the fair market value?
Right.
And
you
write them a receipt, and they now say, okay, great. Now they can take that as their deduction later.
Okay.
Yep. Right, okay. Now it's one of these.
Yeah, sure it is. But the more formalized legal things you can do, the more it's going to help you in the long run. We've learned, like, for example, for our auctions, our silent auctions, the reason we always ask what's the fair market value of your donation is, so I donate something, and it's worth $50.
Right.
Now someone bids $100 on it. They've donated $50 as
right.
what you exceed, right. And now we give you, so as the fourth person that wins the auction, you get a receipt that says you've donated $50.
Okay.
Because
no, it's a great idea. I'm trying to figure out how I change things for October. Because that's when our next one is. And so I've got to go, what do I need to do new? What do I need to do
I think this is a conversation that we can have
do.
Outside
okay.
of
we'll do that outside.
This.
Sorry.
Yeah, because that's really a matter of us sitting down and us asking you, what are you doing currently?
Right.
Yeah.
Here's how we can go move forward.
Okay, cool.
Yep. Does anyone? Yes.
So I'm in Santa Rosa, California, and kind of actually been working with Gary a little bit about stuff he's doing. We're just trying to grow gaming in Santa Rosa, but like, if I can get it to pick up there, when would I want to start looking into
now.
Doing
now.
Start
now. Now.
Yeah. Doing as fast as possible.
Now.
Honestly, really Sean serious. Is going to say, hey,
now.
Let's
and the thing is,
now.
The two of you get together, perhaps, and a few other people built the nonprofit. See, we kind of did it backwards, which you know, we started with this crazy idea of this charity con, and it, you know, after we were already volunteering a second, and then we put this con on in less than 6 months.
it went from birth of an idea to us announcing it in 30 days.
The, wow. The biggest thing is that besides the incorporation costs, there's no minimum for you to get started on this. I mean,
okay.
Even if you weren't going to do your incorporation right away,
mm-hmm.
you can go and get articles and bylaws done and
yep.
elect you know, your officers and get running like that and everything.
Okay.
And then as soon as you save up the pennies to actually go and put in for the incorporation,
right.
you've already got everything done. Once you're incorporated, once you have that letter, there's nothing else that you have to do. You have to do your annual filing to say, we didn't make any money this year.
Gotcha. You are required by law to have quarterly meetings.
Okay.
That you must post for having a meeting. So that if anybody wants to, they can come in and sit down and watch your organization work.
Nice.
And you must keep notes, and then you must file those notes in a public place or make them accessible upon demand.
Public place, can that be the internet?
Yes, it can.
Okay.
That's
as a matter of fact, your meetings can be virtual digital meetings. You could all
oh,
nice. Could be all hangouts.
That answers
yeah.
that next we, question.
We,
yeah. If you wanted to do FaceTime,
Slack.
Yeah, if you wanted to do FaceTime, you could easily FaceTime a meeting and just like, hey, all right, we're taking attendance. Who's
cool.
reading of the minutes? Old business,
yep.
blah blah. Mm-hmm. New business,
blah blah.
Motion to adjourn, seconded, vote.
Done.
I think we're done here, folks. And we are. So, thanks. Like I said, we'll be around the rest of the convention. Just come up and find us.
Yep.
And we'll talk
to you. Bar.
Thank you.
We will talk your ear off about this, because it's something that is near and dear to all of us.
Yep.
This is one of the biggest seminars I want to try and get to.
Thanks, Gary.
This was actually my goal. It was
thank
top
you.
Of my list.
Thank
you.
Yeah, we had no idea.
Thank you for joining us for another PaizoCon 2018 seminar recording. Special thanks to the KDCon team, including Justin Sluder, Ryan Hiller, Stephen Glicker, and the entire Roll for Combat crew. No Direction's PaizoCon coverage would not be possible without their tireless effort. To find this and other great Pathfinder podcasts, visit nodirectionpodcast.com.